In a logo, a blue sign hurtles through space toward a green planet. Turner. Now, a logo of a thick-maned lion framed by a ring of film. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Now, underwater, tall stalks of weed sway in the gentle current. Rays of sunlight filter down from above. Titles appear. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer presents Flipper, starring Chuck Connors as Porter Ricks and introducing Luke Halpin as Sandy Ricks. Now, an almond-shaped parrotfish swims around a coral reef. More titles, with Connie Scott as Kim Parker, Jane Rose as Hetty White, Joe Higgins as Mr. L.C. Prowitt, Robertson White as Mr. Abrams, George Applewhite as Sheriff Rogers, and Kathleen McGuire as Martha Ricks. Screenplay by Arthur Weiss. Story by Riku Browning and Jack Cowden. Produced by Ivan Tors, directed by James B. Clark. Now, on the surface of the ocean, a fishing boat pulling a dinghy cuts through the water.
I've lived all my life on the sea. So did my father. So will my son.
A bare-chested man steers the boat as a young boy looks on.
I've seen the giant creatures of the deep, the great whales, making their passage to northern feeding grounds.
Whales breach the surface.
And the last herds of the sea elephants.
Dozens of sea lions and sea elephants sun their long, fat bodies on a rocky shore.
I've watched the cunning maneuvers of killer whale.
As a few swim near, a sea elephant shakes his floppy snout.
As they leaped into the air and hit the sea with the sound of a cannon shot, frightening the sea elephants and sea lions into the water, where they would become easy prey.
Two sea lions arc gracefully underwater. Now a sleek mako shark glides through the blue ocean.
The shark, lacking this cleverness, prowled for what smaller fish he could find.
A red octopus waves its long tentacles.
The giant octopus, fearsome looking but timid, has many a time avoided my boat.
Now, pod-shaped dolphins race just under the glassy water, breaking the surface every so often.
But the dolphins always seem to come right up to the fisherman's boat and ride the bow wave with the speed of a torpedo.
Each dolphin has two chest fins, one vertical fin on its back, and a horizontal tail fin shaped like a half moon.
Curiously, they seemed at times to be talking to each other and to be looking at us. I used to watch them for hours, studying them, thinking and remembering the stories I'd heard about them. But I didn't really know the dolphins until my son, a child as in the Bible, led me to an understanding of their kind.
Now, on the ocean floor, a dolphin nibbles a finger-like seaweed plant. Dozens of small teeth line the inside of its bottlenosed beak. The curving line of its mouth gives it a smiling expression.
It was a few years ago when the Red Plague destroyed almost all edible fish in the Florida Keys. Like the fishermen above, the surviving creatures below were hungry. Even the swift dolphin was able to find no food.
The dolphin noses at a leafy sea plant growing on a rock. The creature starts to leave, then turns back and bites at the plant. Letting go, it swims off. Slowly skimming near the bottom, the dolphin sticks its nose into the sand so that it is almost completely vertical. Now, dozens of dead silver fish drift in the water.
The fish were poisoned by the plague. Their lifeless bodies were spread throughout the sea.
A large net filled with the dead fish is drawn in toward the boat. On board, Porter and his blonde son, Sandy, slowly pull in the net. Porter wears blue jeans and a skipper's cap. His bare chest and arms are tan. Sandy, 12, wears blue jeans and a white t-shirt.
Well, maybe this time the fish will be alive. Maybe the red tide didn't come out this far.
Well, maybe. But, son, we're going to find fish if we have to go 20 miles out and clear to the bottom.
They haul up their catch. The boy's arms drop heavily to his sides.
They're dead.
Well, let's get rid of them.
They kneel down and empty the net. The fish sink slowly underwater, scattering away from the boat. Their white underbellies shine as they float. At the ocean floor, a dolphin's body undulates. His tail fin propels him through the water. Back on the surface, Sandy rides in the fishing boat as Porter steers.
Used to be, you throw out an anchor, you'd hit a fish.
Paul, look!
Nearby, dolphins swim along, wagging their flat tail fins up and down. Their sleek gray bodies splash the water as they reach the surface.
Dolphins.
Sure making time.
Probably looking for fish the same as we are.
Shouldn't be as hard for them.
His father's smile fades as he looks out into the distance and notices dark, threatening clouds. Porter squints and cautiously surveys the sky in all directions.
What's the matter, Pa? Something wrong, Pa?
Hazel must have changed her course. Weather station this morning said she was headed west. She's coming north now.
Sandy looks around and sees the advancing storm clouds. As the boat rocks, his father picks up a radio handset and adjusts a few knobs.
Amplifier's gone. Should have powered his spare tube. You're not scared, are you?
No, Pa.
I'll lash down everything loose. We're going to make a run for home.
As they speed off in the boat, the bow slams through low waves, sending heavy white spray to either side. The dinghy bounces along behind the fishing boat. Further along, Sandy smiles at his father, who puts one arm around Sandy's shoulder and steers with the other. Porter stops the boat and looks up ahead. An orange helicopter flies toward them, getting lower. Porter taps his son on the shoulder.
Message box, son.
The helicopter hovers over the boat, and someone inside drops a small orange cube. Sandy catches it.
Good boy. Read it.
Rippling water flattens below the helicopter's powerful rotors. As the Coast Guard chopper flies away, Sandy pulls a piece of paper from inside the orange message block.
Return to port. Coast Guard patrol boat will intercept you. Hurricane Hazel now heading north. Winds increasing up to 80 knots. But you knew that already.
I should have known it an hour ago. Hold fast.
Porter starts the boat again, the gray clouds looming in the sky. Ahead, a large Coast Guard boat approaches. Porter stops his boat, and the Coast Guard vessel pulls up alongside him. A tall radar tower sits atop the vessel's tiered bridge and cabin. An officer on board speaks down to them using a megaphone.
You Puerto Rico Coral Key?
That's right!
We've been trying to raise you!
Radio's out! You heard from Nick Malekas? Another boat like mine?
Just had him on the radio. He says he can make it in all right ahead of the storm. I can't take you in tow. You want to come aboard?
Risk my boat? No, thank you. We'll make it.
The Coast Guard officer waves to Porter, who waves back.
Pa, are we gonna make it?
I promised your ma we'd be home before dark.
A stiff wind ripples Sandy's shirt. The little fishing boat speeds away again as the large Coast Guard vessel heads off in the opposite direction. Thick, dark clouds fill the sky above. Porter and Sandy wear yellow rain slickers and hats. The sea grows choppy and waves toss the tiny boat. As it rises and falls on the rolling blue sea, Sandy holds onto a post. Water splashes into the boat. As Porter guides the craft alongside a low breakwater, pounded by waves, a distant waterspout blasts the ocean surface, its long funnel rising into the sky. Two anchored fishing boats pitch on the swelling waves. On shore, a sheriff walks through a small town. His tie flaps in the wind over his shoulder as he passes several townspeople heading in from the storm. Three men nail sheets of plywood over a clapboard building's open archway. As the funnel rages off the coast, a woman ties down her motorhome, her hair and dress whipped by the wind. The sheriff walks down to a dock where men moor their boats.
Come on, son, hurry up!
Mr.
terrible outside the channel.
I haven't seen your folks go by yet. You better go and get them.
Nearby, a stocky man struggles with a rowboat.
Mr. L.C. Pollock, old fool, stop nagging that boat and get on up there to the post office.
Larry Melville! I'd rather leave my wife! There's Porter!
The stocky man points toward Porter's returning boat.
Porter, rich boat!
Water splashes Porter and Sandy as Prowlett looks at them, gritting his teeth in the wind.
Come on, Porter! Come on, Melville!
A low rolling wave rocks empty boats. As Porter's boat nears the dock, Sandy tosses a rope to the sheriff and hops off.
Porter! Where the Halifax you been?
Nick Malak is coming yet?
Ain't seen it. Come on. Everybody ain't gone in. Let's head for the post office.
Sandy, if your mother's not already at the post office, you get home and help her, you hear?
Okay, boy.
Give me that line.
Where the blazes you going now?
Gonna put that boat up at Willow Creek. She'll be safe there.
But you ain't got time.
Give me that line. This boat's my living.
The sheriff tosses the rope back and Porter guides his boat away from the dock. In town, Sandy runs down a road holding his hat on his head. As he reaches the post office door, a girl with long braids comes out. They bump into each other and both fall down.
Jim! Jim, sorry.
Where have you been? The whole town's been worried about you and your father.
Is my mother inside the post office?
No, I was just gonna see if...
You go back inside, I'll get her. Gee, you're lucky.
She gawks.
A hurricane on your first visit.
As Kim goes back inside the post office, Sandy runs off. He stops to help an old man lift a sandbag. They add it to others, reinforcing a building's base, then Sandy moves on. As he walks along a rocky shoreline, breaching waves crash into him. He kneels down and braces himself. The foamy water recedes and Sandy moves along. Now the wind blows off Sandy's yellow hat, which drops into a puddle. Sandy picks his way back over the uneven rocks to fetch it. Crouching down to put his hat back on, Sandy catches sight of a giant wave rolling quickly toward him. He runs down along the shoreline and the giant wave crashes just inches behind his heels. Now, Sandy races through a wooded area to a small beach house surrounded by a white picket fence. Inside, a woman with short brown hair packs clothes and a picture frame into a suitcase.
Son.
Ma!
Where's your pa?
He's taking the boat up Willow Creek. Ma, what about Pete? Can I take him?
Everyone's allowed one luxury. Go get him.
Sandy runs outside. Sandy hops down the front steps and looks around the yard. A long-beaked pelican perched on the roof flaps his wings.
Pete, come down here. We gotta get to the post office.
The bird stays put.
Pete, I'll wheel a car out of you unless you come down here.
Now Porter arrives.
Pete, come down here. We gotta get to the post office.
All right.
Ma's ready to go.
Get Pete and come.
Come on down here, Pete.
Porter goes inside and his wife hugs him.
Oh.
You didn't worry.
I did.
He gives Martha a kiss and she gets her handbag. Porter takes the handle of a small wagon filled with their belongings.
Will it be here when we get back?
The boat's safe. We can always build another house.
Martha holds the door open as Porter pulls the wagon outside.
Thank bless you, you stubborn old bird.
Come on, Sandy. Can't wait.
You'll be killed.
Pelicans have lived through more hurricanes than we'll ever see. Come on.
As Porter pulls the wagon away, Martha takes Sandy's arm and they follow. Pete the pelican watches from the roof. Offshore, waves continue to pound the coast. At the post office, rain whips through the air as Mr. L.C. Prowitt ties his boat to a flagpole. Fighting against the wind, he slowly makes his way to the post office door.
Can I bring my boat in?
Miss Hetty?
No, sir, Mr.
L.C. Proud. You can come in, but you can't bring the boat.
I can't leave Maribel out here. She'll blow away.
Parcels in any post office of the United States shall not exceed 100 inches in length and girth combined. Section 135.32, postal laws and regulations.
I don't want to mail Maribel anywhere.
The same applies to holding and storage. Are you coming in?
Not without my Maribel, I ain't.
Hetty shuts the door. Inside, Sandy and Kim play checkers as others sit around. The sheriff uses the phone.
I'm pretty sure we got a hold of everybody that didn't go inland. Except Nick Balakis. His boat's still out. Well, the phone goes out. We still got the radio.
Hetty eyes the walls, listening to the storm.
Well, we're fairly comfortable here. The water level don't rise. Think we'll make it all right.
Sandy's mother sits next to a young woman who holds a toddler. Martha smiles reassuringly and takes the child from her. Across the room, Porter steps away from a group of men, gently pats Hetty's shoulder, then sits down beside the two women.
Nick must have run with the wind. Put in one of the other keys.
You would have called me.
Hearing the clatter, their eyes shift nervously.
The phone line down. Oh, he's safe. I feel it. Stella, he has to be all right. Nobody knows the sea like Nick.
Sea kills even those who know it.
She takes her son back from Martha and holds the boy close, pressing her cheek to his forehead. On the floor, Sandy and Kim look up from their game of checkers.
I'm not worried about myself. I just hope my father and cousin aren't trying to come out from the mainland.
The state police don't let anybody on the causeway once the hurricane warning goes up.
Well, I bet he's sure worried about me.
What? With you staying with Hetty? You know what she says. No hurricane would dare blow down a U.S. post office.
Miss Hetty! Miss Hetty!
Hetty opens the door.
Miss Hetty!
It's Phil Rowe, Mr. L.C. Proud.
Don't make no difference, Miss Hetty. Maribel just blew away.
Oh, Mr. Prowitt, come in.
The man enters, soaking wet.
Oh, Mr. L.C. Prowitt, you poor dear man.
Post office. Who's calling? Who? Parker?
Oh, it was you.
Hetty dabs her face with a towel, then takes the receiver from the sheriff.
Miss Hetty White speaking. Yes, Mr. Parker.
Kim smiles brightly.
I'm looking at her this very moment, safe, high and dry. Aren't you, Kim? Now, don't you worry, Mr. Parker. As soon as Hazel leaves, you come right on out. Of course, we'll take good care. Hello? Hello?
The sheriff takes the receiver from Hetty and listens, then hangs up.
Well, line's down.
That means the water's over the causeway. Yeah, we could have water in here like in 58.
Outside, huge white waves crash over the breakwater. Back in the post office, Sandy walks over to his father.
Winds to 120, gusts to 160. Barometer still falling. Water spouts reported in the area. Full gale warnings have been posted.
Huh? What about Pete?
A window flies open. As the old man Sandy helped tries to close it, he notices that the building reinforced with sandbags is on fire.
My fish house is on fire! My fish house is on fire! Mr.
Abrams, the old man, runs out into the gusting rain. Porter hurries after him. As orange fire laps at the sides of the fish house, Mr. Abrams trips and falls in the mud. Porter helps him to his feet then, keeping Abrams close in front of him, struggles against the wind of the flagpole. As they hold on tight, Mr. L.C. Prowitt opens the post office and throws Porter a rope. Porter reaches to catch it, and the wind tears Abrams away from the pole. Porter snags the old man by his collar. As they regain their grip, Prowitt tosses the rope again. This time, Porter catches it, and Prowitt pulls the two men towards safety.
Thank you.
Now the bright sun shines through dispersing clouds. Outside the post office, Sandy pulls along the family's wagon. Behind him, Porter helps his wife walk over two boards that lie across a wide puddle. As the family passes the charred remains of Abram's fish house, Porter pats the old man consolingly on the shoulder. Later, on the wooded path, Porter and his family stop. Porter looks at Sandy.
If it's not there, what do we do?
Build it again.
That's right, son. Let's find out.
They round a bend in the path and look up to find their small greenhouse still standing.
It's still there!
Sandy pulls the wagon toward the debris-strewn yard and looks around.
Pete? Pete?
Isn't it beautiful?
You sure are.
Porter pulls Martha close and kisses her.
Thanks for not crying.
Pa, taking him with us. Pa, we should have.
You haven't even looked for him. Maybe he's under the house. Let's go see.
Oh!
Sandy and Porter run over to Martha, where they spy Pete's long beak sticking out from under a green cloth. Sandy scoops up the swaddled bird into his arms.
Well, let's take a look. Little Hurricane Pete. You get him untangled, son. He'll be all right.
Maybe we better look inside.
As the couple heads up to the front door, Porter clears the steps of debris. Sandy unwraps Pete from the green cloth.
Pete, you gave me all the trouble last night. You're gone, you old...
Kim runs up.
Sandy, your house is okay. Gotta come and see.
Yeah, but this bird isn't.
It's Pete.
Yeah, and just as big a pest
Hi,
as
Kim.
Ever.
Hi, Mr. Ricks.
It's kind of damp inside, but it's not too bad.
You going to see about the boat?
Right now. Want to come along?
Yeah,
sure.
The kids run after him as he jogs along a grassy path. Later, at the creek.
Pa! She's wrecked!
No, not wrecked, just swamped. But there might be some damage.
Fallen branches from palm trees and evergreens cover the mud-splattered boat. Porter climbs aboard and inspects the damage while Sandy starts to pull off branches. As Kim looks on, two braids trailing down her back, Porter throws Sandy a small bucket.
Here, son. You bail out the dinghy while I take a look here.
Thigh deep in the water, Sandy swings the bucket over the listing dinghy. Something thrashes.
A shark!
Where?
Over there!
A dolphin swims nearby.
It's a dolphin.
Porter turns to Sandy.
You hurt or scared?
Just scared, I guess.
Good. You better start bailing. Mr. L.C. Prowl is going to have to help me get the boat out. Drive shaft's broken.
From the shore, Sandy watches the dolphin, which slowly glides closer, its head peeking above the water. It swims away. Later, Prowitt stands by the creek with his mule.
Lay to, Northern Star. Lay to, baby.
Anytime your jack is ready, Mr. L.C. Prowitt.
Aye, aye, Porter. 1/3 ahead, Northern Star. 1/3 ahead. Easy as you go.
The mule moves forward, slowly pulling the boat along the canal. The kids sit on the roof of the boat's tiny cabin.
Gee, it's so pretty up here.
Look, there he is again.
The dolphin watches them, poking its head from the water.
Pa? Ever see anything like that before?
Well, dolphins do like that every now and then. They're right rudder, Northern Star.
Do they really, Mr. Ricks?
Well, there are lots of stories about dolphins. One old one that Nick Velakis... That Nick tells about a Greek poet named Arion, who lived some 3,000 years ago. Once when he was sailing home to Greece from Sicily, robbers took his money and threw him overboard. Well, a dolphin who was following the ship swam to him, lifted him up, and carried him safely to shore.
You believe that, Pa?
Well, I believe dolphins are very special animals.
Animals?
Sure. A dolphin isn't a fish. They breathe air and have eyelids. Have babies just like people.
Later, in the family's kitchen.
You mean the dolphin jumped right out of the dinghy?
Like a bucking bronco.
And like a dolphin, I was yelling, shark, shark.
Porter gets the door. It's the sheriff.
Oh, hello, Sid.
Sid steps into the kitchen frowning and turns his back to the table.
Would you like a cup of... What is it?
Porter, I thought you ought to know. He was your friend.
Nick Valakis.
We found his boat, but not his body. And we searched all day.
Later, Nick's widow and other townspeople line the shore.
He is not dead. He doth not sleep. He hath awakened from the dream of life. He has outsoared the shadow of our night. Unto Almighty God, we commend the soul of Nick Valakis, who might not have been of our faith, but was in spirit a brother to us all. We commit his body to the deep. Amen.
Porter takes a step forward, looking at Nick's young widow.
Nick Valakis was killed by the sea, but he wasn't defeated by it. His life and his living came from it. When the red tide came and took the fish away, he kept looking for new places to find them. It's food for all of us.
He looks to Nick's boat, its bow adorned with a wreath of flowers.
Nick, I'll keep searching.
Later, Hetty supervises the unloading of a Red Cross truck.
In there, young man. Put it in there. Oh, Porter, knew I'd catch you on the way back. Sorry I couldn't attend, but the living come first. Lou Germain sent you a wire from Ocala. He... Well, read it yourself. It's really to you.
Thanks, Hetty.
Come now, a little bigger.
What's on Lou's mind?
Sandy! My father's on his way with my cousin.
Is he bringing his new boat?
Uh-huh. Well, I'll go fishing.
Okay.
Sandy, you've got a lot of chores and repair work at home.
Yes, sir. See you later. Fishing.
In the kitchen.
It's nice of Lou Germain to offer to help.
Truth is, I was going to ask him. It's going to take a good $300 worth of credit. New drive shaft, engine parts, some new planking.
They have coffee.
Poe, have you thought again about doing what Lou did? Go on to the mainland, I mean.
Open a boat agency or some inland job we talked about?
At least there'd be no red plague or hurricanes.
Well, there might be other things.
I guess. Well, if you're going to truck the boat into Ocala in the morning, let's go to bed.
Would you want to live on the mainland?
I just don't know anymore.
She starts to clear the table.
Leave those till morning, sweetheart. Oh, I don't want to forget this.
Porter pins up a list of chores. It reads, nail down loose siding, clean yard, rebuild fence, splice ropes, repair torn nets, fix tool shed door, and repair wire on fish pen.
Do you expect him to get all those chores done before you get back?
Well, you ought to. I'll be gone at least a couple of weeks.
He looks toward a closed door, then opens it. He and Martha peek in on Sandy asleep in bed. Soft moonlight streams in from the window. Daytime. Outside, Sandy pulls a large tree branch through the yard. Pete sits on top of it.
Dang you, Pete! Don't you think this is heavy enough?
Sandy's mother watches him through the window. Sandy walks over to Pete and grabs the pelican at the base of his wings.
Beat it!
He tosses the bird on the ground. Inside, his mother opens the refrigerator and pours a glass of milk.
Mom?
She hands him the milk.
Mom, could I please? Thanks, Mom.
Tired?
Dragging tired.
I think you've done enough for one day.
As Sandy steps wearily to the list of chores and checks one off, his mother smiles, shaking her head. Sandy sips his milk and sits. A luxury fishing boat pulls up to the dock.
It's Kim and her father.
They've come for me. Mom, can I go?
Of course.
Sandy's mother kisses his cheek. Outside, he runs down the dock as Kim ties up the boat.
Hi, Sandy.
Hi, Kim.
Dad, this is Sandy Ricks.
Coming with us?
Oh, yes, sir.
Oh, with a red flag and a hurricane, is there any fish out there?
Oh, yes, sir, if you know the spots.
Well, you're the pilot. Cast off the line.
Kim and Sandy untie the boat. Out on the ocean, the two kids stand at the boat's bow.
Not very many fish. Sometimes it's one or two.
A tall brown-haired boy wearing swimming trunks steps out of the cabin and joins them on the bow.
Sandy, you remember? I told you my cousin was coming with Dad. Bill Jamieson, Sandy Ricks.
The boys shake hands. Later, a dolphin frolics underwater. Bill jumps off the boat wearing a scuba tank, regulator, and fins.
Come on, Sandy.
Be careful.
Kim and Sandy jump in wearing fins, masks, and snorkels. On the ocean floor, a dolphin swims around peacefully. Bill swims underwater using his scuba gear. The yellow oxygen tank is strapped to his back, and silvery bubbles rise from his mouthpiece. He carries a spear gun and scans left and right. Meanwhile, Sandy and Kim swim over the rock sea floor. Small bubbles trail from their snorkels. Kim's long hair flows down her back. In the inky blueness, small fish weave through tall stalks of green seaweed. The two kids look at each other through their diving masks, then rise to the surface. As they pop up, they blow water out of their snorkels. Several feet behind them, Kim's dad holds a fishing rod off the side of his boat. The kids wave, then turn to each other.
Hey, let's go find Bill.
Sandy and Kim put the mouthpieces of their snorkels back in place, then dive again. They swim closely, side by side. Stopping themselves by holding onto a rock, they scan a coral reef. Sunlight dances over it. Sandy signals to Kim by shrugging his shoulders, and they both rise to the surface again. Meanwhile, the dolphin glides gracefully near the ocean floor. Bill swims along, holding his spear gun ready to shoot. Its long metal shaft glints in the shimmering light. At the surface, Sandy and Kim kick along, their faces submerged. Their snorkels stick out into the air, and their kicking fins splash the water. Meanwhile, Bill swims further along. Holding his spear gun in front of him, he propels himself by kicking his flippered feet. Now, as Kim and Sandy rest for a moment, treading water, Bill keeps moving. His yellow trunks and air tank stand out brightly in the glowing blueness all around him. As he passes over a nubbly ridge, Kim and Sandy spot him. Floating on their stomachs, they watch him through their masks. Now the dolphin swims into view. Startled, Bill freezes. As the dolphin loops by in front of him, Bill aims his spear gun and fires. The spear hits the dolphin's side. As the panicked dolphin swims away, a cord connecting the spear to the gun pulls Bill through the water. The gun handle jerks in Bill's grip as the dolphin tries to escape. Kim and Sandy watch from above. As Bill gets yanked along, his head bumps into a large piece of coral. His hands let go of the gun, and the injured dolphin swims away. Bill's motionless body hovers just over the ocean floor. Kim and Sandy face each other above the surface.
What was it?
A dolphin! Go get your pot!
Kim swims off as Sandy repositions his snorkel and dives straight down to the ocean floor. Swimming up from behind Bill, Sandy hooks his hands under Bill's arms and starts toward the surface. On the boat, Kim stands at the bow and points ahead as her father steers.
Over there a little bit!
The boat putts along as Sandy raises Bill's limp body. The hurt dolphin floats near the surface with the spear puncturing its side. Bill's gun lies in the sand, still attached to the spear by the long cord. Kim and her father watch Sandy surface, holding Bill. Kim's dad throws out a life preserver. Sandy grabs hold of it with one arm and carries Bill in the other. Kim's dad reels them in. Now, Sandy and Kim stand outside the doctor's office.
Dr. Burnett'll know what to do. He's taking care of just about everybody.
It's a slight concussion, but he's going to be all right. Sandy, I can't thank you enough.
If Bill's okay, could we go back to Silver Cove now?
Silver Cove? What for?
That dolphin, sir. It has a spear in its side.
Well, what could we do for it?
My pa taught me to put a dog or a cat or any animal out of its pain, especially a dolphin, because they beach themselves before they die.
But, Sandy, I've got to call Bill's mother and tell her what happened. She may want me to take Bill in to see the family doctor.
Won't take long, Dad.
Please, sir.
Dad.
Kim, it's not that I don't want to. Bill's mother would never forgive me.
Sandy walks away from them.
Sandy!
Sandy runs down the path toward his house. He passes through the broken gate and sprints up the front steps.
Ma! Ma! Ma!
Inside, Sandy looks around the house, then runs into his room. He reaches above a bookcase and takes a rifle off its wall mount. He gets bullets from his bureau drawer and loads the rifle. Holding the gun, he pushes the drawer closed with his elbow and rushes out of the house. The slender rifle is almost as tall as he is. Sandy's bright blonde hair flaps in front of his eyes as he moves hastily down to the small dock. He unties a faded wooden motorboat and gets in. Pulling a handle, he starts the outboard engine and steers the boat along the saltwater canal. As Sandy guides the boat through the narrow channel, the wake ripples out behind him and laps at the low rocky sides, banded at the waterline with algae. Sandy's boat moves through the channel mouth and out to sea. Now, surrounded by blue water, the bow of Sandy's boat cuts across gentle waves. In the distance, a long stretch of low land sprawls on the horizon. The wind blows Sandy's hair back away from his face, and his eyes squint as he surveys the water and shoreline. Scanning a nearby coast, Sandy sees nothing but a rocky edge, lined with gangly trees and leafy green bushes. Later, Sandy stands in the anchored motorboat. He puts on his diving mask and jumps in the water. Wearing fins on his feet, he swims straight down to the bottom. Silver bubbles escape from his mouth and float up behind him. Below him, a large spotted sea turtle propels itself through the water, flapping its long paddle-like front limbs. Sandy looks around the ocean floor, holding on to a large rock. He rises to the surface. Popping his head out of the water, he studies the calm sea ahead of him. He sees only the vast blueness of the sky and ocean and dives back down. Underneath him, a long, slim barracuda makes its way by a reef. Its sleek, silver body is spotted with black dots. The barracuda navigates over a seascape of corals and sea fans. Dozens of the plant-like organisms grow out of the porous rocks, swaying in the ocean current. Sandy ascends once more. He lifts his mask to his forehead and looks around. Later aboard his boat, Sandy continues searching for the injured dolphin. The motorboat bounces slightly as it glides over low turquoise waves. Sandy sits up straight at the stern, holding the tiller with one hand. He squints toward the shore and notices the beached dolphin on the rocky coast. The animal's gray body lies motionless on the brown rocks that make up the shore. Biting his bottom lip, Sandy steers the boat closer to the dolphin. He stops it a few yards away and drops the anchor. Standing in the boat, he picks up the rifle. He props the butt against his bare shoulder and takes aim, peering down the gun barrel at the injured dolphin. Grimacing, he lowers the rifle, relaxes his stance, and presses his lips together thoughtfully. Sandy puts down the rifle and picks up a sheathed knife. He tucks the leather sheath in the waistband of his denim cutoffs, slips diving fins on his feet, and jumps in the water. He swims over to the dolphin, who lies in a bed of green seaweed. Sandy approaches cautiously. A large spear protrudes from the side of the dolphin's tail. Sandy yanks on the taut cord, trying to free the end in the water. It doesn't budge. He unsheathes the knife and cuts the cord. Quickly, Sandy swims a few feet away and turns to watch the dolphin.
Hey, go ahead. You're free. I cut you loose. Swim.
The dolphin doesn't move.
Hurt that bad? Please move. Just a flipper or something? Can't leave you here to die. Can't you move at all?
Sandy rumples his lips thoughtfully, then swims quickly back to his boat. He grabs onto the side and pulls out a large fishing net. Holding the bundle in one hand, he struggles to paddle back to the dolphin. Waves lap at the motionless creature. Sandy makes his way back toward the dolphin's side. Reaching the shore, he pulls himself to his feet and crouches next to the speared dolphin. The dolphin flaps its tail. The small blowhole in the top of its head flexes open. Sandy stands over the dolphin, balancing himself on the uneven rocks. He lifts the soaking fisherman's net out of the water and gently covers the dolphin's body with it. Sandy's wet cutoffs stick to his legs as he works. Sandy gets some rope from the net. He takes up a length of it and wraps it around the dolphin at its belly. Sandy bites his lip as he struggles to roll the heavy dolphin just enough to slide the rope underneath it. Holding onto the rope, he cautiously rocks the dolphin a few times in an attempt to get him in the water. He does it. As the dolphin lies in the shallows, Sandy pulls on the rope, tugging the creature away from the shore. The white fishnet covers the dolphin's entire body, and green and black seaweed wraps around its tail. Holding the rope like a leash, Sandy paddles with one arm back to the boat. The long spear and the dolphin's dorsal fin protrude from the water as Sandy gently maneuvers the dolphin alongside the boat. Sandy climbs aboard, then ties down the free end of the rope. Still wearing his large diving fins, Sandy clumsily steps to the stern. He pulls up the heavy anchor and starts the motor. With one hand on the tiller, he slowly turns the boat around, keeping close watch of the dolphin. The dolphin turns with the boat and they slowly putter away. Back by Sandy's house, Pelican Pete bobs on the water, flapping his wings. Sandy carefully steers the boat along the channel's calm water. As he approaches a wooden gate next to the dock, he turns the motor off and rushes to the bow. Unlatching the gate, he pushes off the dock and guides the boat and dolphin inside the watery holding pen. Pete watches, fluttering his wings. In the kitchen, Sandy's mom shakes salt into a pot. Sandy walks in nonchalantly.
Sandy?
Hi.
Where'd you go?
Nowhere.
What'd you do?
Nothing.
Supper will be ready in a minute. Didn't you go out with Kim and her father?
Oh, sure, Mom.
Well, that's nice.
Mom?
Yes?
Mom?
Sandy, you been up to something?
Oh, no, Ma, only...
Sandy, what?
I've got an 8-foot dying dolphin in the fish pen.
An 8-foot dolphin. You know how long that cabinet is?
About 8 feet.
Now you go wash up for supper.
He lowers his head and walks away.
Sandy, I think I'll have a look.
She follows him outside. They weave past the weathered picket fence and cross the sandy yard. Striding between two small trees, they arrive at the pen. Martha gapes.
Sandy!
The dolphin lies still by the shore.
But that's what I told you, Ma. He got speared.
Oh, that poor thing.
What'll we do, Ma?
Same thing I'd do for any animal. Get me the kitchen knife and the iodine.
Sandy rushes toward the house as his mother kneels beside the dolphin and checks the spear. Later, Pete perches on the fish pen gate as Sandy and his mother finish cleaning the dolphin's wound.
And then I just towed him home.
Where'd you go? What'd you do? Nowhere. Nothing, huh? I think it'll be supper and a good night's rest for you.
They head back toward the house as the dolphin floats peacefully in the water. Later, Sandy lies awake in bed. He rolls back his covers and quietly goes to the window in his pajamas. Opening the window, he climbs through. Outside, Sandy crosses the yard barefoot. Wind blows through the trees and tousles his hair. At the pen, early morning sunlight sparkles on the water. As Sandy approaches, he hikes up the legs of his pajamas, which fall back down to his ankles as he wades into the water. Sandy stops a few feet away from the dolphin, which is almost completely submerged. The creature looks up at Sandy, meeting his attentive gaze. Sandy's mother comes up behind him wearing a bathrobe.
Sandy, that water's freezing. You want to catch your death of cold? Back to bed.
Yes, ma'am. I just wanted to see how Flipper was doing.
Flipper?
Yes, Flipper. I named him Flipper. Don't you think that's a good name, Ma?
I think you should go back to bed. Go on now.
Okay.
She gazes sadly at the dolphin.
Oh, Flipper.
She watches the weak animal floating, then turns to the house. Later, Kim joins Sandy and his mother by the pen.
My cousin says he's awful sorry. Daddy took him home this morning.
Flipper drifts listlessly in the pen.
Ma? Is he gonna die?
It's a very bad wound.
But you fixed it.
He needs strength to recover. He needs food. In the ocean, he'd have a chance.
In the ocean? Ma, the first shot that sound would kill him. He's so weak.
He'll die here, too, without food.
Sandy looks at her with pleading eyes.
Couldn't we... somehow... can I...
Your pa told you how much fish a dolphin eats?
About 15 pounds a day.
With the red plague, where would you find it?
Some days up at Silver Cove, there's a lot.
Not every day.
But he'll be well in a few days, and then we could... please, Ma, please?
Well, you try it, but just today.
Come on, Kim.
Sandy takes off down the short dock, and Kim follows. Sandy unties the line to the motorboat, and the two children jump in. As Martha smiles at the pair from the shore, Sandy pulls a cord to start the outboard motor and aims the boat out to the open sea. Later, underwater, Sandy swims with a spear gun, his eyes searching the seascape. Kim waits in the boat and looks at two small fish laying near her feet. She covers the fish with a wet towel, then peers down into the water. Swimming in his cutoffs, Sandy scans the ocean. He also wears a round yellow diving mask and blue swim fins. A spotted sea turtle glides by and Sandy surfaces. He grabs onto the side of the boat and shakes water off his head.
Sandy, don't go down anymore. You'll make yourself sick.
But only two little fish?
Please. There just aren't any more.
I guess you're right.
He takes off his mask and pulls himself up into the boat. Back in the fish pen, Flipper looks up feebly as Sandy and Kim arrive carrying the two fish. Sandy climbs down from the dock and hops onto a small floating platform inside the pen. He splashes the water with his hand and Flipper drifts slowly towards Sandy, rolling onto his side and eyeing the boy as he swims. Sandy wiggles a fish in the air, drops it, then wiggles the other. As Flipper opens his mouth a little, Sandy drops the second fish. Both fish float in the water, untouched by Flipper.
I guess he doesn't like those kind of fish.
What are we gonna do?
I don't know.
Now, on another dock, a few small fish lie beside a boat. Three men in polo shirts walk coldly past the skipper.
You don't feel you owe me nothing for a whole day's fishing?
You owe us a day's fishing. 50 miles out and 50 back. Our deal was for marlin, and all he gets a bunch of trash fish. But don't expect to see us back again either.
As the men go, Sandy arrives with a bucket.
Mr. Lake, sir, could I have some of the fish?
Take them all. But to get them, you're going to have to clean my boat. Clean it of the smell of fish every board you've seen. From now on, this is going to be a coral reef sightseeing boat. The devil with fish.
Yes, sir.
As he leaves, Sandy hops onto the two-level Marlin fishing boat, pulls out a mop, and starts to clean. He hoses down and mops the sides, polishes a long metal ladder, and wipes the windows. Later, as the sky fades into twilight, Sandy lugs a bucket of fish back home. Pete, waiting on the platform in the fish pen, holds up his wings and stretches his long neck. Sandy unties a rope, then steps down into a small blue skiff and drifts into the pen. Setting down the bucket, Sandy leans over the edge and peers into the water. Flipper swims steadily around at the bottom. The dolphin noses straight up out of the water. Startled, Sandy loses his balance and falls into the water. Flipper glides over towards Sandy, pokes his smooth snout above the water, and opens his smiling mouth. Sandy recoils slightly, propping himself up against the rocky shore. He watches the dolphin with wide eyes. Flipper lolls gently onto his side, and Sandy slowly reaches out, inching his hand forward. Sandy flinches. Flipper noses his round gray beak towards Sandy, and the boy eases down to the water's edge. With a light touch, Sandy brushes Flipper's snout. The dolphin bolts upright in the water and teasingly wags his head. Sandy's cautious gaze breaks into a grin as Flipper playfully bobs in the water. The smiling dolphin nods, and Sandy dives in. Now, underwater, Sandy treads in place as Flipper glides around him. The dolphin undulates his body and tail fin, gently propelling himself around the boy. Shimmering sunlight gleams on Sandy and the dolphin as they frolic. Now, as Flipper continues to swim, Sandy hitches a ride. Grabbing hold of the dolphin's dorsal fin, the two glide together. They surface, and Sandy holds on, kicking his legs. They swim side by side. Now Sandy gently rolls Flipper over and rubs the dolphin's smooth underbelly. As Flipper speeds off, Sandy tags along, again holding the dolphin's fin. In the house, Sandy's mother looks up from peeling potatoes. Martha wipes her hands hastily and goes outside. She sees Sandy with Flipper.
Sandy, come out!
Flipper arcs through the water and Sandy grins.
Sandy, don't do that! Sandy, come out!
Flipper wags his head.
Don't do that! Please, Sandy!
Her brow furrows as she watches her son. Sandy swims over and climbs up onto the rocky bank of the canal. Martha gapes at him.
What's the matter, Ma? I think we better go in the house and talk this over.
She puts her arm around him and leads him toward the house. In the pen, Flipper arcs through the water. He flops forward with a splash, and Pete flies away. The pelican skims over the surface, hopping across the water, then lands. Now in the house.
Still, even if,
Flipper.
Even if Flipper is as gentle as a dog, how will you feed him? There aren't any fish, not even at Silver Cove.
Mr. Abrams is bringing in fish from the other keys to sell here.
Mr. Abrams is not going to feed your dolphin.
I'll do chores for him. He needs help to rebuild his fish house.
What about your own chores?
I'll do them both, mine too. Please, Ma, let me try.
Well, you can try for a while, but you better get at that fence first thing in the morning.
Okay, Mom.
As his mother darns a sock, Sandy kisses her on the cheek. Morning. As Sandy lifts a fallen section of fence upright, Flipper watches from the pen. Sandy looks back at him, picks up a bright orange ball, and throws it to the frisky dolphin. Flipper grabs it in his rounded beak and throws it to Pete on the dock. The pelican catches it, then lets it roll away. Sandy returns to the fence. Nearby, a little blonde boy in shorts creeps along a nearby low stone wall and sneaks a peek at Flipper. The dolphin wags his snout and the little boy scampers away. Sandy looks at Flipper.
Hungry again, huh?
Sandy drops the broken section of fence. He puts an empty bucket into a small wooden wagon and pulls the wagon across the yard. Later, a sign reads, Abram's Fish House, Wholesale and Retail. The weathered gray-haired owner stands at a table. He leans on a tin tub of fish and looks past a bulky scale at Sandy.
All right, it's a deal. You're hired. Dollar an hour.
In fish?
In fish. Start nailing up the board.
Sandy goes over to a half-finished wall and sets a tall new board into place. Later, at the pen, he throws fish to Flipper from a bucket. Flipper catches and eats the fish. Later in town, Sandy continues his work rebuilding Abram's fish house. Leaning over a low stone platform, he saws planks and stacks the wood in a pile. Back at the fish pen, he feeds Flipper from the small blue skiff. Now, at Abram's, he brushes white paint onto the finished wall. From under the surface of the fish pen, Sandy's watery likeness wobbles. Flipper glides smoothly toward the grinning boy. The dolphin's watery view shows Sandy's hand hold up a fish, and Flipper surfaces. Sandy throws more fish to Flipper and smiles down at him through the rippling water. Now Sandy continues painting the repaired wall. Later, wearing his round mask and swim fins, he pets Flipper's smooth, rubbery skin. The dolphin chews on a piece of fish. The two move gracefully together. Web-like patterns of sunlight shine down, shimmering on their bodies. Later, Sandy carries another bucket of fish onto the short dock. He throws a fish to Pete. The pelican takes it and swallows it whole. Crouching at the side of the pen, Sandy throws a fish to Flipper, who deftly catches it. Later, Sandy pulls his wagon on the road and passes two boys playing ball.
Hi, Rick. Hi. Hi, Roy. Hi. Hey, Kim Parker says you got a porpoise at your place that does tricks.
Dolphin.
You're a bigger liar than she is. I've been out to your place a couple of times. It don't do no tricks.
I can prove I'm not a liar.
How?
Tomorrow afternoon. Bring your friends, all of them.
Okay.
But everybody's got to bring a ticket.
A ticket?
One fish. Each kid has got to bring a fish.
Okay.
Later, Sandy's mother smiles as Kim greets a pudgy boy on crutches. The boy tosses a fish into a bucket.
Hi, Charlie.
A dozen children stand on the dock.
What'd you get?
At the pen, Sandy throws in a flower and Flipper nips it in his beak. The boy and dolphin almost touch nose to nose as Sandy takes the stem in his teeth. Kim accepts fish for more children. A girl in plaid shorts brings a fish.
Hi.
All the children watch Flipper perform.
Everyone loves the king of the sea. Ever so kind and gentle is he. Tricks he will do.
Sandy throws a rubber fin in the water, and Flipper noses it back to him with his snout.
And we know Flipper lives in a world full of wonder, lying there
Flipper, go get these.
Under the sea.
Sandy throws two apple-sized balls into the pen. Flipper retrieves both in his mouth and returns them to Sandy. Now Sandy throws his yellow diving mask in the water.
Look at the sky, and rainbows appear.
Bring this back to me, Flipper.
Flipper retrieves it.
We know our Flipper. Flipper knows every answer. No one can be.
Flipper, come on, Dad. Flipper, Dad, come on.
Flipper spins in the water, his shiny snout glistening in the sun.
Lives in a world full of water.
Flipper twirls at an angle and splashes with his chest fins. Flipper nods rapidly, then Sandy kisses the dolphin's snout. As one boy claps, a black dachshund dog on his lap falls into the water.
Hear me a knife, way down in the deep.
The dachshund paddles towards Flipper and nips playfully at the curious dolphin circling him. Dog swims ashore. A man arrives in the station wagon.
Polk telephone.
He faces Martha.
I say Polk telephone. He'll be in tonight.
The man watches Sandy with Flipper.
Say, that boy, yours sure has a way with critters, ain't he? Polk figures to be in about midnight.
Thank you, Beck.
As Pete balances on the back of the skiff, Sandy sits in the front, holding onto Flipper's fin. The dolphin spins the boat around and around. In the evening, Porter drives up in an open-top scout, pulling his fishing boat behind. Martha runs out to greet him, and they kiss.
It seemed like 10 weeks.
It sure did. That's why I didn't stop to put the boat in the water.
Porter glimpses Pete flapping into the pen. He pulls slowly out of his embrace and looks off to the crashing surf, which glistens in the dim light. Martha looks at him wistfully, then approaches.
What is it, Poe?
Well, maybe it's not right keeping you out here. But Martha, 10 days in Ocala decided me all over again. I couldn't trade this for jammed sidewalks, auto smoke, all that hurry. Unless you said you wanted to.
I don't want to.
He notices a gap in the picket fence.
But none of the work's been done. Martha?
Well, Paul, the day after you left, it so happened that a dolphin...
This'll take a while. We better go inside.
Porter gives a baffled frown as he returns to the house with Martha. Daytime.
Paul, watch this!
Sandy rubs Flipper's side. Porter watches, putting a foot up on a post and leaning on one knee. Sandy jumps off the pen fence alongside Flipper. Porter grins as his son holds on to Flipper's dorsal fin and he skims through the water. Porter slowly shakes his head in wonder. Now Flipper swims on his back and Sandy hugs him, riding along while stroking the dolphin's smooth belly. Sandy's dad watches intently as the dolphin takes Sandy for a ride underwater. They cut a curving path across the surface. Now Flipper shoots up into the open air and crashes down. His body flops underwater and churns up a fizzy cloud of bubbles below the surface. He soars upward again. Porter grins brightly. As Flipper swims on his back, Sandy holds his arm wrapped around the dolphin's full, round middle. Flipper rights himself, and Sandy holds the dolphin close, his cheek nuzzling just behind Flipper's head.
Come on out, son. I want to talk to you.
Sandy hoists himself up onto the pen's floating platform, and Porter helps him up onto the dock. Flipper watches.
Pretty good, huh, Pa?
I've never known anybody who's seen anything like it. It's like the old stories Nick used to tell about. But your mother tells me you expect to keep the dolphin.
You'll figure some way, won't you, Pa?
Where? The boat's ready. I'll need the pen.
Couldn't we dig another, maybe?
It took a month and $500 to blast that one out of the car. Sandy, the dolphin's well again. Let him go free.
Oh, he's come to be my friend. I'd lose him. Couldn't do that.
He's a friend who's kept you from your work. Not one thing finished in the 10 days I was gone.
I'll do my work, honest.
How'll you feed him?
Doing chores for Mr. Abrams.
What about your own chores?
I'll do them, too.
Son, you've tried that before. It just didn't work out.
I couldn't let him go, Pa. I've gotten to love him.
The boy's pleading gaze fixes on Porter.
Do you remember Stella Valakis at the funeral? Didn't she love her husband? Sandy, for you, this may be the first time. I know it hurts. Open the fish gate.
Can't, Pa. Can't.
Porter looks at the boy, then strides over to the pen.
Pa, please don't.
Stern-faced, Porter looks at Sandy, then pulls the rope and opens the gate. Flipper pokes up and shakes his head.
Flipper, don't go!
Scooting underwater, the dolphin swims out of the pen into the open channel. Sandy runs to the end of the dock, his eyes pooling with tears.
Flipper! Come back!
He watches the dolphin make for the open sea. Morning. Sandy and Kim stride past the unmended picket fence. Kim wears a pale yellow dress. Sandy wears a mustard-colored polo shirt and clean dungarees.
I sure hope we find Flipper.
I never prayed so hard in my life as I did this morning.
Reaching the dock, Sandy and Kim hop into the small motorboat. Sandy starts the outboard motor, and they head off. Later, the two kids drift along, dwarfed by the vast water all around them.
Flipper!
Sandy's tiny form sits, and he steers them away. Along the horizon, distant trees stand silhouetted against the sky. Later out at sea, Sandy watches his father pull in the nets.
Nothing again?
Nothing. Have you thought about what I said the other day?
About losing things and people you love?
Uh-huh.
Like Flipper and Nick Valakis.
Like everybody.
Everybody? Not you and Mom.
In time, everybody, son. But that's not the thing about now. What we've got to make up our minds to is to find fish. Look ahead to better days, new friends. And for you, school come September.
How come the hurricane is everything but the schoolhouse?
Porter grins and ruffles Sandy's hair. Underwater, Flipper speeds past coral and rock as the boat motors along in the sun. Sandy sits alone at the bow while Porter steers at the helm behind the cabin area. As the boy gazes out over the water, he sees Flipper skimming through the sea alongside the boat. The dolphin slows and surfaces.
Boy, am I ever glad to see you.
You say something?
No, sir.
Sandy lies on his stomach.
Stay down. Pa doesn't think you're a good influence.
As Flipper ducks under, Sandy leans near the boat's edge.
Sandy! Fall overboard!
Flipper dives back down and Sandy searches the water for him.
Hey, where are you going?
Hundreds of fish swim below. Flipper wags his snout, then juts straight out of the water and propels himself backward on his tail fin.
Flipper, where are you going?
Flipper pumps his vertical body along, then flops onto his back. As Sandy stares down at him, Flipper surfaces and stares back.
You want us to follow you?
Speeding backwards up on his fin, Flipper slices a straight path. At the helm, Porter notices Sandy craning his neck.
You see something?
I thought I saw some fish jumping toward shore.
Well, that's Greenpoint. I don't see anything.
I thought I did.
Well, hang on.
Porter throws a heavy jug of water overboard. Attached to the fishing net, it acts as a weight. As Porter steers the boat in a wide circle, hundreds of feet of netting trail off the boat's stern into the water. As Porter turns the wheel, Flipper noses along underwater. Beside Porter's boat, the net bulges with dozens of fish. Porter pulls it up toward the surface, and the dolphin swims off, his tail fin flapping in the blue water.
Sandy, come here!
Sandy runs astern, and Porter beams as they pull up the heavy fish-laden net. The net wiggles with fish, whose silvery bodies quiver in the sunlight. Later, at home.
Healthy, live pompano.
What made you try off Greenpoint?
Well, Sandy saw them jumping.
Well, I didn't exactly see them.
Tomorrow I'll be back there at first light. And Martha, tomorrow I'm bringing back a boatload. Son, by the way, when I'm gone, will you fix that wire?
Okay.
Later, Sandy works in the pen, nailing chicken wire to the gate. Underwater, Flipper noses the sandy ocean floor with his snout. Behind him, huge boulders of rock and coral fill the marine landscape. As Sandy hammers, the dolphin surfaces, poking his snout up just outside the pen. Flipper circles slowly, then jumps up in the water, nodding vigorously at the boy. Sandy climbs up the pen's fence, then stops at the top and looks down at the waiting dolphin.
You didn't have to stay away that long.
Sandy jumps down into the blue water and paddles on his back with Flipper, who frolics around him.
Flipper, come here.
The dolphin circles Sandy.
Flipper, come up here.
Flipper spirals on his back around the boy, getting closer and closer. Sandy treads water, watching him, then reaches out for the dolphin. Flipper dodges.
Flipper, don't do that!
Flipper swims in close to Sandy, and the boy wraps both arms around the dolphin's middle. As Flipper swims, he gently tows Sandy along. The two circle around each other in the water, then Sandy grabs Flipper's dorsal fin, and the dolphin pulls him back toward the fish pen. They cut a straight path across the channel. As Sandy loses his grip on the dolphin, Flipper takes off. Sandy surfaces in his mask and looks around. As he dives back under, Flipper jumps in a high arc over the fence into the fish pen. Pete shifts on his perch as Flipper eats a fish. Sandy surfaces.
Hey, where are you?
The dolphin eats more fish, and Sandy dives under again to search. Surfacing, he spots the dolphin flopping contentedly in the pen.
No! Flipper, no!
Sandy swims over, his arms pumping quickly through the water. Pete watches as Flipper swallows fish after fish. As Sandy draws closer, Flipper swallows another fish. Now Sandy reaches the pen. As he quickly climbs the fence, Flipper soars up out of the water. Sandy splashes down into the pen, then dives under and looks nervously around at the now empty water. In the distance, Porter's boat enters the channel. Sandy surfaces, looks around, and lifts off his diving mask.
Wait on the pot, Papano! Pa coming now!
As the boat approaches, Sandy swims over to the gate. He jumps up on the wooden railing and pulls it open. Flipper plays and wags his head. porter maneuvers the boat slowly toward the dock, he notices the open gate. He cranes his neck and sees Flipper slip out. As Sandy pushes the gate closed, Porter's gaze flits from Sandy to the departing dolphin, then back to the pen. His stunned gaze settles into a stern glare. Later, Sandy stands nervously in front of the pen, shrugging his shoulders as Porter dips a long-handled net into the water. He lifts the net out. It's empty. Sandy's eyes remain pinned to his father. Porter skims the net once more through the water. Again, it comes up empty. His shoulders droop.
All of them. Every last one. That dolphin got every last one of them. Pompano's selling an Ocala for better than a dollar a pound, and you let a dolphin into the fish pen. What have you got to say for yourself?
Pa, the fish you caught today, couldn't I help you get them into the pen?
There were no fish at Greenpoint. Yesterday's catch was just an accident.
Yes, sir.
Porter puts his hands on his hips.
What's wrong with you, boy? How old are you? 12? Almost in your teens? Or are you 9? Or 7? Or 5? A child who doesn't have the sense to know what its next meal depends on? Answer me! The fence? The yard? The nets? Not one of your chores done, and now this! Are you growing up or down? Aren't you getting any sense of responsibility, of obligation, discipline? Or are you hanging on to a feed-me, dress-me, blow-my-nose childhood? Answer me! Are you...
I'm sure he would.
Martha arrives.
If he could. Sandy, you better go to your room.
One more thing. Tomorrow you'll go out by yourself. And by yourself, you'll find the fish to replace with that dolphin ate. And you'll keep going out every day till you've replaced every pound of them.
Yes, sir.
Sandy mopes toward the house. Martha looks softly at Porter, who returns only a stern gaze. Inside, Martha watches Sandy drop heavily onto his bed. As she closes the door, Porter comes in. She gapes at him.
Why?
Because it was the truth.
But you were too rough. He's just a boy.
Well, he's got to grow up.
Nevertheless, he is a boy. He's hurt. He's crying.
He still has to be told the truth.
The way you told him? Shouting? Nearly taking his head off?
Well, you should have stopped me.
I did.
Look, Martha, I love that boy.
Then why don't you tell him?
Well, men just don't talk that way.
Maybe they should.
Maybe. Look, sweetheart, I grew up with the sea. The sea is never soft.
And he is a fisherman's son.
Porter nods gently at Martha. They embrace, and Porter plants a tender kiss on Martha's forehead. Later, out on the water, Sandy hauls up an empty fish net. He throws it down into the small motorboat. Underwater, Flipper circles through a school of tiny fish, then swims toward the surface. Sandy sits morosely in his boat. Holding a fishing pole, Sandy draws up an empty hook. As he dips the line back into the water, Flipper pops up and gazes at the boy. As Sandy looks over his shoulder, Flipper dives under and swims away from the boat. Sandy turns his tired gaze back to his fishing pole. Again, he lifts it out of the water. It's still empty. As he puts down the pole, Flipper swims up to the boat and noses his snout happily up at Sandy. The dolphin swims off, then returns, holding a foot-long fish in its mouth. He holds the fish up to Sandy.
Is it for me?
Sandy smiles. As he takes the fish, it wiggles out of his grasp into the water. Flipper retrieves it, and Sandy happily takes back the fish. Gratefully, he rubs under Flipper's chin.
Can you give me another one?
Flipper swims off, then returns with another fish in his mouth. Sandy caresses the dolphin's snout. Now Flipper brings fish after fish to the boat. Soon, Sandy's bucket is full. The boy gives the dolphin a kiss on the snout. Later, the bucket sits on the dock before Porter, who smiles.
Near Kingman Reef, huh? There's never been fish there. What made you try?
I just had a feeling.
Well, never mind why. Let's go back and see.
Sandy and his father walk to Porter's fishing boat, and Porter starts the motor. Each of them casts off a line of rope, and Sandy hops aboard. Porter works the throttle, then takes the helm and steers the vessel along the channel. Bright sunlight gleams on his tanned upper body. Sandy stands on the edge of the fish hold and leans on the boat's windshield. His blonde hair ripples in the wind as he gazes out ahead at the ocean. Later, at sea, Sandy and Porter haul up the heavy net.
Huh? Will I be alive this time?
Only one way to find out, son.
The two continue drawing in the heavy net. As they pull it up, dozens of live fish wriggle in the net.
Ha!
Now, this could be life for Coral Key again. We'll stop at the wharf and tell him to go home. Now, this time, I'll make sure the fish gate stays closed.
But Flipper was the one...
Flipper can find his own fish.
Later, shoppers crowd the dock.
Easy, folks. There's enough for everybody.
Here's a big fat one. Pull out your sight there.
Sandy, you keep it going with Mr. Pry, will you?
Keep coming, lad.
Abrams inspects the fish with Baxter.
Well, what do you think?
Good as it ever was, but for commercial, there has to be tonnage. Is there tonnage?
There's never been any at Kingman Reef before.
Well, there is now. Maybe it has to do with the red tide, or it could be a new current through Kingman Channel. Baxter, you and I could sample the whole area in one day.
I'll be at your place at 7 in the morning.
Good.
Nighttime. Martha takes a platter of fish from the oven and sets it on the table in front of Sandy and Porter. They smile and breathe in the aroma.
Mmm, smells good.
Martha sits, and all three bow their heads.
Lord, whose bounty sustains us, we ask thy favor. Unite our hearts in family love, strengthen our will to serve thee in peace. We thank thee, O Lord, who bringest forth food from the sea for us all. Amen.
Pa, when the Lord brings forth food, he gets help sometimes, doesn't he?
Well, the Lord helps those who help themselves.
I mean, the Lord, for instance, would ask one man to help another?
Of course.
Well, sometimes wouldn't the Lord... ask dolphins to help people?
Porter and Martha trade a look.
What's on your mind, Sandy?
It was Flipper who led me to Kingman Reef.
Flipper, huh?
Yes, Pa.
Well, maybe you saw the same dolphin, or maybe you didn't. It doesn't matter. Try to understand, son. If the dolphins come, they tear our nets, they eat our fish, they chase the rest away. Now, they may be your friends, but when the fish is scarce, they're a deadly enemy. If they come, we'll kill them. We have no choice.
Even Flipper?
Martha casts a concerned look at Porter.
Even Flipper.
Now, as Flipper swims alone, Sandy lies in bed, staring at the ceiling. He pulls back the covers, gets out of bed, and grabs his denim cutoffs. Later, he steers the small motorboat at sea. Underwater, a large dolphin swims along as a younger, smaller dolphin follows closely. The younger brushes up against the parent's belly. Flipper follows. Now, at home, Sandy's father and Baxter stride toward Porter's boat. Porter carries a rifle and puts it down on the piled netting at the stern. He starts the engine and casts off a line as Baxter unties another. With his muscular arms, Porter shoves off from the dock and Baxter steps aboard the boat. The two men motor down the channel toward the open sea. Morning sunlight glistens on the water. Meanwhile, Sandy guides his small motorboat along, scanning the rippling waters. Sandy lets go of the tiller and stands up in the weathered boat. Looking around, he cups his hands at the sides of his mouth.
Flipper! Where are you?
He pitches a small metal anchor into the water. As it sinks to the sandy bottom, a shark glides by, its gaping mouth lined with jagged teeth. Sandy jumps in, and the dorsal fins of two sharks slice through the water. As Sandy swims toward the bottom, wearing his diving mask and fins, a 4-foot shark slinks upward. Sandy reaches the ocean floor and holds onto a rock. Air bubbles rise from his mouth as he surveys the barren underwater terrain. One of the sharks prowls by at the surface. As Sandy glances over his shoulder, he sees a shark coming head on. Quickly, Sandy swims away. Another shark heads his direction. Flipper arrives. The dolphin sees the shark chasing Sandy. Flipper darts over, pumping his strong tail fin. Now a shark lunges at Sandy's leg, but the boy dodges. The shark swims past, its dark gray skin grazing Sandy's hand. Flipper races over at high speed and rams a shark with his snout. Sandy swims on, unhurt. As another shark moves in, Flipper doubles back. One shark startles Flipper. The dolphin circles around, then, aiming his blunt beak, slams forcefully up under the shark's jaw. Flipper butts another shark and blood trails from its gills. As the limp creature sinks, Sandy swims up for air. More sharks approach. In a fury, Flipper thrusts his snout into shark after shark. As Porter's boat appears in the distance, blood streams from the wounded sharks and clouds the water. The sharks disperse. One swims off, bleeding from its side. Another drifts belly up to the ocean floor. Now, Flipper swims over to Sandy. The dazed boy grabs onto the dolphin's dorsal fin, and Flipper pulls him swiftly through the water. Exhausted, Sandy loses his grip. As he drifts face down in the water, Flipper circles back. The boy manages to grab hold of the passing dolphin again. His fingers gripping Flipper's dorsal fin, Sandy gulps in air. Nearby, Porter and Baxter approach in their boat.
Better be getting pretty close now.
Before them, scores of dolphins arc out of the water, their pointy fins silhouetted against the glistening sea. Others group underwater.
Dolphins. Hundreds of them. If we kill a few, maybe the rest will run.
A few yards away, Sandy lies on Flipper's back.
Look, Paul, there's one that got inside. I'll get him.
Baxter takes the rifle in hand. As Flipper pulls Sandy along, Porter watches with a puzzled gaze. Baxter takes aim just as Sandy's arm, head, and yellow diving mask come into clear view.
Wait, Baxter. You said...
Porter grips Baxter's arm, and the man lowers the rifle.
Sandy!
Flipper brings Sandy alongside the boat, and Porter and Baxter pull the boy on board. Flipper watches from the blue-green water as Porter lifts up Sandy's diving mask and clutches his dazed son to his chest. As Porter's hands stroke Sandy's back, his eyes lock on the watchful dolphin. Flipper rises up onto his tail fin, glides backwards in the water, and splashes down, sending out a spray of water. Later, Sandy sits up in bed in his pajamas. Porter and Martha stand near.
And so after Flipper killed the shark, he lifted me up and brought me back to you. Just like you told us about Arion, the Greek poet. You believe me, don't you, Pa?
I saw it.
And, Pa, there are lots of fish. Millions and millions of them. And it was Flipper who led me to them. Aren't there plenty for all of us?
Martha looks at Porter.
I think it was written for us today to share with the dolphins, not to kill them.
Later, Porter and Martha smile as Sandy rides joyfully on Flipper's back, his right arm raised skyward. He straddles Flipper like a bronco, his blue-finned feet bent at the knees. This film was described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, WGBH Boston. Described by Carrie Danahy and Paula Broussard. Read by Carla Hardaway. Funded by the U.S. Department of Education. Now, with a loop of rope hooked on his snout, Flipper tows Pete, Sandy, and Kim for a ride in the skiff. Credits appear. Music composed and conducted by Henry Vars. Song, Flipper, by Bi Dunham and Henry Vars. Associate producers Raku Browning and Harry Redman Jr. Production supervised by Ben Chapman. Directors of photography Lamar Boren and Joseph Brunn, ASC. Film editor Warren Adams. Assistants to the producer Robert A. Foss and Jeb Golson. Sound recorder Howard Warren. Technical advisor Commander Robert C. Canham. U.S. Coast Guard. Words appear. We express our gratitude for the cooperation of the Miami Seaquarium and Captain Adolf Fromm, who trained the first dolphin 13 years ago. The marine land of the Pacific and California to the officials of New Providence Island in the Bahamas, Everglades City, and Miami, Florida. And for the scientific advice of Dr. John C. Lilly Communication Research Institute in Miami. Flipper was portrayed by Mitzi, owned and trained by Milton and Virginia Santini. Copyright 1963 by Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, Inc. and Iron Toss Films, Inc. Flipper, the end.